Well, hello there. Yes, it is myself, David Connolly, here. Really glad to be back with you for some archaeology news. It's snowing outside, but it's warm here. Well, what have we got? Well, of course, what I've forgotten to do is start the way we're supposed to. That this is the Archaeology News, and it's brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website, along with Past Horizons. All the stories have been collected, yes, you guessed it, from various sources. And to view details on each story, including that important source, see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. So what do we have for you this week? Well, we have an absolutely amazing find, or at least report of it, from Dartmoor in southwest England. It's a Bronze Age kist burial. We've got prehistoric origins of skin decorations, that's tattoos to you and me, and did overhunting lead to domestication during the Epipaleolithic? Well, we'll investigate that one. Then we get a glimpse into 9,000 years of occupation at the fabulous little English village of Didcot. And feeling hungry? Well, I certainly am. Soup making in the Stone Age. Is that when it started? We have then a report of another remarkable burial from the Neolithic, this intact dolmen that's been excavated in Switzerland. Absolutely amazing, I can tell you. And we finish off with some even more amazing news. It's very hopeful. We reported previously on ancient rock art under threat in Paraguay and a Kickstarter campaign to try and raise money for a documentary. Well, I won't give it away. You just have to listen to the end. So let's get started then. Let's head off to the Dartmoor and find out about that Bronze Age grave. Well, there's been a rare discovery dating back 4,000 years, described as the most significant find on Dartmoor, which sits in Devon, England. It's given archaeologists a glimpse into the lives and deaths of people who once lived and died there 4,000 years ago. The undisturbed Bronze Age kist was made of Dartmoor granite. It was uncovered back in 2011 in a peat bog on White Horse Hill. I remember it well, actually. It has now revealed the first organic remains ever found on the moor, and also includes a hoard of around 150 beads, including two made of amber. To give you an idea about how amazing that is, previously, the total number of beads ever found on the entire moor was, wait for it, 8. The park's chief archaeologist, who I've had a wee chat with, Jane Marchand, explained that what was so unusual was the survival of so many organic artefacts, which you just normally don't get in a grave from this period. They've long since rotted away. Among the grave goods was an animal pelt containing a delicate bracelet studded with tin beads, a textile fragment with detailed leather fringing, and a woven bag containing two ear studs, believed to be the only ones discovered in the southwest. I have never heard of these sort in this area at all. Wait, you can find them, if I remember correctly, in Ireland. Despite the remains of perhaps 5,000 structures and buildings and 200 burial kists on Dartmoor, the moor itself has offered up very few of its secrets. English heritage archaeologist Wynne Scutt said a lot of it's to do with robbing. People actually robbed the stone in the past. Many people robbed the artefacts. So this is unique. And as I say, what's more unique is the actual survival of organic remains. Because of the acid, soil often actually completely destroys not only this, but the bones as well. There's another site up in Scotland, the name of it unfortunately escapes me, where a similar preservation has been recovered. AOC Archaeology were the ones to actually do the conservation on it. Absolutely amazing. I saw it in the laboratory, and there was fox fur scabbard for the little bronze dagger and wreaths of flowers of meadowsweet that had been placed on the body. Absolutely remarkable. I cannot wait, and I've been promised in July, I cannot wait to find out exactly what's going to come out of this Dartmoor burial. Anyway, from excitement to a little bit of theoreticals. According to the prevailing view of most paleoanthropologists and archaeologists, about 1.5 to 2 million years ago, early humans evolved into nearly hairless primates in order to more efficiently sweat away excess body heat. According to Penn State anthropologist Nina Jablonski, humans may have later begun to decorate their skin to increase attractiveness and perhaps to express a group identity. There's a lot of evidence of when humans began to lose their hair based on molecular genetics, says Jablonski, who believes that over thousands of years, humans used their skins as canvases of self-expression in a variety of ways, including permanent tattooing and branding, as well as temporary cosmetics and body painting. Whilst it's actually difficult, you bet ya, to know when humans began to decorate their skin, some of the earliest preserved skin fragments show signs of tattooing, so says Jablonski. Decades of research in caves in Europe and South Africa, among other places, show evidence of the manufacture and use of ancient pigments, particularly for creating wall paintings. Many scientists suggest the pigments were also used for body decoration, and the practice could, and we stress could, go back more than 100,000 years. The recent discovery of a prehistoric workshop in the South African cave of Blombos, for example, revealed the manufacture of ochre, where there was no evidence of any wall painting. Hence, what were they using it for? Well, abalone shells were found to contain ochre, combined with fat, crushed bone, quartz and charcoal to produce a pigment compound possibly used for painting and decorating the skin. This was dated again to around about 100,000 years ago, a time when early modern humans are thought to be on the threshold of thinking and expressing themselves in a symbolic way, thus laying the foundations for all future art and language. Well, I think there are a few leaps in that, but that is a very interesting concept and piece of theoretical research. Now, did overhunting lead to domestication, in fact? A new study on the populations of wild cattle and pigs in the Levant Valley by Nimrod Marom of the University of Haifa in Israel has helped reshape our present understanding on the beginnings of agriculture and the domestication of animals. The 9th to 8th millennium BP site at Shar Hagolan was used to study human interaction with pigs and cattle in a period just before the appearance of domesticated species in the Jordan Valley. The early Neolithic village was occupied for about 8,000 years during what is known as, was occupied around the time 8,000 BC during what's known as the Yarmukian culture. The site is already famous for the remarkable assemblage, an absolutely amazing assemblage of figurines. One of the structures yielded no more than 70 carved pebbles and clay-fired figurines. No other single site of this period has produced so many. It's one of the first sites, in fact, where pottery is found in the region. At the centre of the village stood a large, well-constructed building with a courtyard reached through narrow, winding alleys which runs between the what we're calling domestic structures, several rectangular rooms with thick mud brick walls and one circular room for storing grain were all built around this courtyard. We're looking at communal activity of basically hunter-gatherers who are becoming people who are in the process of domestication. The results from the study indicated that full domestication of both cattle and pigs occurred at the site during the 8th millennium BP and were preceded by a period of severe overhunting. You can tell this because the body size in cattle and pigs was significantly smaller than that of the local wild population during the earliest phases of settlement at the site in the pre-pottery Neolithic. This can then be directly linked to an evolving human-animal relationship. If you want to see more about that, then I suggest that you pop along to Past Horizons, where we also have a fabulous link to the original article. Now to fabulous Didcot in Oxfordshire, England. Back in 1995, a hoard of 400 Roman coins was discovered west of Didcot, indicating that the land had been lived on for centuries. So when archaeologists began digging in the fields in 2010, they knew it would be an interesting sight, but even they were surprised by the wealth of finds that their trowels unveiled, proving that people had been living. Sorry, I just love the thought of trowels unveiling. There's a strange sort of mix of similes in there. Anyway, the people had been living in Didcot for about 9,000 years. The fields west of the town had been given a complete timeline from when hunter-gatherers were in Oxfordshire area around the 7000 BCE through to the present-day village surrounding the site. The earliest remains were found by one Steve Lawrence, hello Steve, from Oxford Archaeology, who first noticed a flint that had clearly been worked and on further examination discovered hundreds more dating back to the Mesolithic period around 7000 BCE. The most significant find on the dig was a rare Neolithic ceramic bowl from 3600 BC when people had just begun to farm the area. It was found upside down in a hole where a tree had once stood. It may have been an offering to the gods of the underworld. So say it loud and say it proud. Ritual. Another rare find was a pond barrow, a stone-lined 12-metre circular depression. A bit like archaeology, which archaeologists believe was used for exposure burials. The body would have been placed on a high platform and the bones picked clean by birds and other animals. Only a dozen or so pond barrows have yet been excavated, so this may provide some new information. Up to 50 burials of some adults and children were also identified. It's possible that three of the burials in grain storage pits are what we in archaeology call special burials, because they're actually doing something that's quite unusual. It could be, I'm going to say it again, ritual. It could be for social outcasts, or it could be, well, who knows. Evidence has been found at other sites, though not at Didcot, suggesting that Iron Age people had practiced human sacrifice, and in fact may have even brought people up for the sole purpose. Job description? Human sacrifice. I think I'll pass on that one. They're found, these people, with immaculate nails and signs of having lived the privileged life. When the person is killed, it's done it also in three different ways. It's the triple killing. So it happens to appear to be, again, I'm going to say that word again, ritual. Archaeologist Kate Woodley from Oxford Archaeology said the team still had lots of work to do analysing the finds from the dig, which could take another 2 years. They don't want to say too much too early and get it wrong. Glad to hear about that. We'll get a more precise picture once the dating's been done and all the sampling has been carried out. But there will probably be a lot of ritual, I expect. Only kidding, folks. This is a fascinating report and look forward to it in a couple of years' time. Now, most sources state that soup did not become commonplace until somewhere between 5,000 to 9,000 years ago. It now looks like waterproof, heat-proof containers were invented much, much earlier than previously thought. Harvard University archaeologist Ofer Bar-Yosef and colleagues reported findings of 20,000-year-old pottery from a cave in China that showed evidence of being in a fire. Their discovery is possibly the world's oldest known cookware, but exactly what the users were brewing up in it is still not certain. That kind of container, though, isn't even needed for boiling. An ancient soup maker could have simply dug a pit, lined it with animal skin, and then filled this pot with water, dropping in hot rocks. The power of the expanding steam would then crack the rocks, a distinct characteristic that starts to show up in the archaeological record around 25,000 years ago in Western Europe. So says archaeologist John Speth, a professor of anthropology at the University of Michigan. But Speth says that boiling and soup could be even older. You can boil without using heated stones, he says. All you need is a waterproof container suspended over a fire. The water itself within the container keeps the material from burning. So long ago, cooks could have fashioned such containers out of tree bark or hides of animals or the stomach of an animal even. Finding evidence of such boiling, though, would be incredibly difficult because these materials would just not be preserved in the archaeological record. Neanderthals were probably cooking in some sort of way, as a 2011 study from the Proceedings of the National Academies of Science found evidence of cooked starch grains embedded in 46,000-year-old fossil Neanderthal teeth from Iraq. This doesn't prove that they were making soups, Speth says. Some have suggested the meal could have resembled some sort of oatmeal, but it would say that it was likely. putting a date on the world's first bowl of soup is probably impossible. Anthropologists haven't been able to determine for certain when man was actually first able to control fire or when cooking itself was invented, though it is likely to be more than 300,000 years ago, before even Homo sapiens first emerged. Harvard primatologist Richard Wrangham says in his book Catching Fire. And the story is probably different for different people in different parts of the world. It appears that pottery was invented in Eastern Asia thousands of years before it emerges in Western Asia. Maybe boiling wasn't so important because you had bread in the West to balance out the protein. Other parts of the world never had any tradition of boiling food. A lot of hunter-gatherers don't even use containers at all. So says Speth. In places like Tanzania and the Kalahari, there are tribes that didn't boil water until Europeans arrived. Speth says, though, that it's very likely that humans were concocting. What were we talking about again? That was it, soup. They were making a soup at least 25,000 years ago in some places. Now, the remarkable find in Switzerland, a communal dolmen grave dating back over 5,000 years containing 30 bodies and Neolithic artefacts has been found in the region of Bern in Switzerland. It represents the first ever intact burial chamber to be found from this period north of the Alps. The site was originally found when a farmer decided to try and move a rather large glacial boulder that he had to try and mow around when cutting grass in his field. In October 2011, specialists from the archaeological services of the Canton of Bern began investigation of the large granite slab weighing 7 tons. The glacial erratic measured 3 metres by 2 metres and was nearly a metre thick. That's when they first started to realise that what it was covering was a grave belonging to a Neolithic community. According to a report in the Berner Zeitung, Roman and medieval artefacts were found directly overlying the Neolithic layers and show that the dolmen was in fact a visible feature in the landscape until at least the 13th century. Most of the sediments that actually covered the site were flood deposits from a nearby river. The uprights of the dolmen are slightly tilted to one side due to constant flooding from the river, but despite this, the site is amazingly intact. The excavation of the burial chamber has revealed over 30 individuals, as well as what represents grave goods from the period, including flint arrowheads and pendants made of animal teeth and bead, possibly made of limestone. DNA testing of the occupants, as well as sophisticated analysis of their teeth, will hopefully be taking place over the next 2 years. The Swiss Neolithic begins around the middle of the 5th century BCE and is coeval with both the Linibandkeramik culture in Central Europe and the Vinča culture in the Balkans. During the 4th millennium, when this dolmen was constructed, the culture seems to have been developing independently from the rest of Europe, and this excavation may help open up further study into the connections that linked the regions during this period. A team from Swiss television's flagship science programme Einstein followed the archaeologists as they continued their research into the Oberbipp dolmen. The site director, Marco Amstutz, comments, "When they found it, they felt like they won the lottery." You can see again more of that and some fabulous images as well as a video on Past Horizons just by putting in dolmen. Now, did I say there was good news about ancient rock art in Paraguay? Here it comes. The march of so-called civilization has been having a devastating effect on ancient rock art in the Amambe Hills in Paraguay. For thousands of years, incredible examples of rock art has lain undisturbed in caves and rock shelters, protected from the ravages of rain and sun under a thick canopy of dense jungle. But as vast areas are cleared and burned, then these amazing examples are exposed to, and either the rocks are shattered by the intense heat from the burning of the place, or the sunlight fades it, fungal growth appears and destroys the rock art. The increasing loss of these sites came to the attention of an American documentary maker, Frank Weaver, who was making a brave attempt not only to record as much of the art as possible, but also to bring attention to the plight of the Pai Tavatera Indians, that some of their culture may still be preserved. Frank Weaver is supported in his quest by rock art specialist and dear friend of ours, Dr. George Nash of Bristol University, who's quoted as saying, Rock art, like any other material culture, is a dwindling resource. The rock art of the Guarani Indian region of Paraguay is unique and revealing an ancient and vibrant society steeped in ritual and religion. However, the plight of this potentially important resource and its guardians is currently at the mercy of short-term gain. This is yet another small but significant corner of our global village, which is now under grave threat from so-called progress, deforestation, and the destruction of cultural heritage and the alienation of the indigenous population. As he says, it has to stop now. Well, it's a start, and we have great news to tell you that the Kickstarter campaign reached its goal of over $15,000 so that the film and further research on this amazing rock art can now go ahead. We've got to the end of this news, so I hope you have enjoyed that. You've had time to have a lovely cup of coffee, a rest, and a bit of relaxation. I'm going to tell you, of course, to pop along to Past Horizons to find some news, perhaps a world project or two, or even buy a tool. You can go to pasthorizonspr.com to start you off on that journey. And, of course, there's always my website, Badger, BAJR.org, if you want to get into archaeology in the UK. And more can always be found at the fabulous Stone Pages website. Yes, news.stonepages.com. I have to say, on a personal note, I'm actually really looking forward to meeting Diego from Stone Pages face to face on the 5th of May. How cool is that? We have actually been collaborating on this news for, I can't actually remember how long, years now, 6-7 years, something like that. And we've never actually ever met face to face. So this is something to look forward to. And who knows, I might have him actually saying something on one of the podcasts around that time. Anyway, until then, there'll be a few more news weeklies, and I hope you'll come back to us next week.